Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the SAF Holland Investors and Analysts Conference Call. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Stefan Haas.
Yeah, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stefan Haas speaking from the Investor Relations Department. I'd like to welcome you to today's conference call, which is basically a follow-up to our pre-release call, which we did on October 9th. And as you used to, Mr. Borkhardt will run you through the market developments and trends and also the developments in the respective regions. And afterwards, Dr. Heiden will take over and give you comments on the financial situation. Afterwards, as always, you're free to address your questions and answers. So we'll go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, Stefan, thanks a lot for the introduction. Also, a very good morning from my side. This is Detlef Borkhardt. As usually, I will start, as Stefan just said. And with this, I would like to jump right into the presentation, which is on page number 2 with the agenda. I will start with a business summary, do a market update later on, followed by the financials by Matthias, and then I do a market forecast and we'll talk about the company outlook. With this, I jump to page number 4 with a business summary. We have 2 pages today. There are a couple of bullet points. Let me start with the first one, which is a very positive one. Q3 was our best quarter ever, historical highest sales number with 277.1 million euros, 8.83% growth compared with the previous year, and our organic growth of this was unexpected high with 9.6%, and that is was driven by all regions. I come to that later on the following pages. So this is our absolute highlight. So growth-wise, we are on a very good track also according to our long-term strategy 2020. The next bullet points are unfortunately not that positive, but I would like to guide you through this. First of all, we had temporarily increased operating costs, mainly in the U.S., related to our plant consolidation. I will talk about that later on more in detail, and also Matthias will elaborate on this. That was a burden of approximately 4 million euro, which we haven't adjusted in our EBIT. The next one, that is an adjustment, 3 million euros in one-time restructuring costs, also related to our US plant consolidation, which also hit us in Q3. All this together then amounted our EBIT to 20.9 million, previous year 21.6, so almost on the same level, but, and that comes to the next bullet point, if you look then to the EBIT margin of because of the high sales, which we reached in Q3, as I said, it came in with only 7.5%, comparable with 8.4% in the previous year in Q3. Why is that? Again, I will talk about it later more in detail, but to make it very clear, most of them are one-time effects. It is related to the swift increase of the demand from our dear customers in U.S. for truck and trailers, and that came in exactly at the same point when we have been at the late stage of our transitioning activities in our U.S. plant consolidation. So altogether, the reported EBIT amounted to 15.5 million compared with 16.2 million in the previous year. On the next page, page number 5, there are 2 remaining points. Talking about the earnings per share, that came in with 17 euro cents compared with 24 euro cents in Q3 2016, and the adjusted basic earnings per share amounted to 25 euro cents. The outlook I will talk about later on page 26 of this presentation, and I would not like to do it 2 times, so therefore I go to the next page, which is then the market update, starting with the trailer market in North America on page number 7 of our today's presentation. Yeah, most of you are already familiar with this chart, which shows month by month the development in the last 2 years, 2015, 16, and the current activities, the current trend in 2017. And you can see these are the orange bars. To sum it up, We saw in September, actually, 21,000, more than 21,000 units. These are trailer net orders. This is not production. That was 47% up month over month, and 83% year over year. That means in the first 9 months of this year, the trailer net orders in North America increased by 43%. And if you look at month by month, every month this year was higher than the months than in the last year. Just to remind you, the trailer market for North America is important for us. That stands for roughly 20% of our global sales. Even more important is Europe with 40%, but I come to that. But it is important for us. Also to remind you, the forecast for this year, 2017, was minus 16%. So if you compare the forecast by all the market intelligence which was available end of last year, now to see that the trailer orders increased by 43%, that is quite the difference. And also to remind you, 2016 was already not a good year, with minus 6.5%. So this is now really a big swing to the positives on the North American side. On the next page, page number 8, I would like to talk about the truck market in North America. This stands for 11%, roughly 11% of our global sales. So it is also important, but not that important than the trailer market. And also here to look a little bit into the history, last year, 2016, the truck market in North America dropped by almost 30%. And the forecast for this year was roughly something between minus 6 to minus 8%. What you see here now, the actual development in the year 2017 is that, and also look to, for example, to the month of September, with 22,000 units, this is 60% better, 60% better than the year before, and the first 9 months amounted to an increase of 42% on Class 8 net orders. 42% compare with 6 to 9% as the forecast minus for this year, and the end of the year we will see, but we might end with plus 9%. So a completely swing in the opposite direction. That means, coming back to our plant consolidation, which we started earlier this year in January, we thought, and everybody thought, this year 2017 will be a pretty bad year in North America, both for trucks and trailers. Minus 16 for trailers, minus 6 to 7 for trucks. Now, as you can see, it's completely different, and of course, that wasn't anticipated. We hadn't planned for that, and we thought the plant consolidation is the right time to do it in 2017, but, okay, it happens what it happens, and we need to live with this, but that costs some money, and this is part of the results of the Q3, which we present today. But again, I come back to that on the North American side. To finish the market picture, on the page number 9, you see the development of heavy truck market in Europe. These are now new registrations of trucks above 16 tons. And also here you can see a quite nice figure, quite numbers, not that bullish than in North America, but very stable. Although the last couple of 2 or 3 months, it's a little bit lower than, but it's declined in total by 6.3%, but we are talking about a very high level, and LMC, and I will come to that later on my last page of the presentation, forecast for this year, 2017, a plus of 5.5% in the truck market in Europe, and also for next year, they see another increase of 4%. Also to remind you, the truck market in Europe for us is roughly 4% of our global sales, so not let's say the biggest influence, but also a good indicator. With this, I would like to leave the market update and come to our financial figures on page 11. On the left-hand side, you see our sales development quarter by quarter from 2015, 16, and now 17. And as I said already before, with 277.1 million euro, we achieved the highest result ever in a Q3, compared with 255 million euros in the previous year. On the right-hand side, you see our development in the adjusted EBIT, both in absolute numbers, but also percentage-wise. And as you can see, the orange bar, Q3, came in with 20.9 million, comparable with 21.6 in Q3 2016, and with 7.5%. On the next page, you see the sales split by sales channel and by region. As you can see, on the left-hand side, the OE business grow to 208.3 million euros compared with 186, and the aftermarket was almost stable with 69 million compared with 69 million in the previous year in the Q3. The aftermarket could have been better, but the issue is that we served mainly in North America OE customers first, with fifth wheels, axle suspensions, etc., because there was a quite high demand from our truck and trailer customers, and to avoid to stop their production lines, we decided to serve them first. This is, of course, created a backlog in the aftermarket in North America. We will solve this issue for sure. This is on the way, but as I said, the aftermarket business could have been a little bit higher if we would serve them as in a normal way. On the right-hand side, you see the split by sales region. EMEAE grew from 133 to 144 million, Americas to 110 from 104, and APEC very nice from 17.5 million euros to 23 already. Yeah, with this, I would like to come to the regions more in detail. On page number 13, you see the development in our biggest sales region, which is Europe, Middle East, Africa, and India. And as you can see on the top line here, strong organic growth outperforming market trend. Very nice sales growth of 7.9%, as I said, to 144 million euros. On a currency adjusted basis, it was 8.6%, which is a nice increase in a stable market in Europe. And so we still are gaining market shares, and this is mainly on the axle, trailer axle and suspension side. We saw solid growth again in South Europe, Italy, France, Spain, but, and this is also very nice to see now, that finally Russia is coming back. For the last 12 months, Russia is strongly coming back, both on the OE side, but also on the aftermarket side. And also for next year, the outlook for Russia is positive. It looks like that the Russian fleets needs to buy new equipment now after years of not buying enough equipment. It is too old. There is a pent-up demand in Russia quite big. And it looks like that fleets are now buying trucks and trailers again. The same is in Poland. Very stable, very good market, and the Polish trailer builders export a lot to the Russia region, and we also see a quite benefit for us in this regard. The Turkish plan, one sentence to that. As you know, we opened a new facility in Düce, which is in Turkey, right between Ankara and Istanbul. We are running on a one-shift basis now, sold out until end of the year, mainly with orders from outside Turkey, that means from the neighboring countries. And the Turkish market itself is not that good anymore. That was after the political crisis last year. But there is some hope that it will improve next year. We don't know yet. We don't see it yet. But anyhow, the plant is filled. And we hope that if the Turkish market will pick up somewhere next year, we can start also a second shift in the Turkish plant. This is to come. So far, the Turkish plant is positive and contribute to our very nice success in the European region. Nice success that relates to the next one, which is the EBIT. You see further below, in Q3 2016, we did 13.6 million euros or 10.2%. We are still have a double-digit number with 10.1% or 14.5 million euros. Of course, with the higher sales and with the stable adjusted EBIT, we benefit clearly from that. It is burdened by steel price. This is another issue globally. Steel prices are rising both in North America and Europe, but also in China. This is a burden for us, and most of you know this is a timely thing. That means We have contracts with most of our customers, especially with the big customers, and in these contracts we are able to pass on any price changes in steel. It means if the prices go up, it takes 1 or 2 quarters to charge higher prices to our customers, but if it goes down, it's the same development. Overall, I'm very satisfied with the development in MERE. We are on a very good track here, and you see the numbers, they speak for themselves. Yeah, on the next page, on page number 14, you see our performance in the Americas. Sales-wise, good development. As I said already, sales grow to 110 million compared with 104 in Q3 last year. After adjustments of our new member of the family, KL, which we acquired last year in September, not 100%, but 57% of the company in the south of Brazil, and adjusted with some negative currency effects of 4.8 million in total, organic sales increased by 6.4% in the American region. As I said already, the unexpected strong rise in the demand from U.S. customers, also Canadian, but mainly U.S. customers, of course, related to this sales increase. Yeah, the EBIT picture is not that good. 8 million last year in Q3, that reduced now to 5 million or only 4.5%. Of course, not satisfactory for us, and of course much slower than we planned and budgeted. As I said already, besides the 3 million in adjusted restructuring costs, we had another 4 million euros in additional operating expenses. Why is this? This is the next bullet point. The margin was heavily burdened by temporarily higher personnel costs. We have too many people on board. We have double teams in place in the old. We had double teams in place in the old factories, but also in the new factories. We have a lot of expedited freight expenses to serve our customers on time, and a lot of production inefficiencies related to the U.S. plant consolidation. The product mix also was not in our favor, and on top of that, as a perfect bad storm, the steel price increase, as I said already. So all that lead then to the only 4.5% in adjusted EBIT, which is, as I said, not what we planned for. Most of these things are on-time, or let's say one-time events, and we are on a good way with our plant consolidation, and I will talk about later a little bit more, but just to say it right now, it will be done end of the year. It was a plan to move the equipment out of the two factories in Holland and Muskegon until end of this year, and it will be done. The Holland facility is already closed. We closed it in September, end of September last this year, and the Muskegon facility, both placed in West Michigan, will be closed end of this year. So with this, we are on track. Yeah, coming to APEC China on page number 15, another very nice development, both in terms of sales, but also in terms of profitability. I'll guide you through that. Sales, you see an increase from 17.5 million now to 23, which is a very strong sales increase. By currency adjusted was 35%, so absolutely fantastic. Why is that? There's mainly one reason. The key driver, that's the second bullet point, is there's a new regulation in place since September last year in China. It's called the GB 1589, and you can call it as an overload ban. That means the total weight for trucks and trailers using Chinese road is limited now. It's reduced from 58 down to 49 tons. And if you run now a truck and trailer combination above this 49 tons, you cannot use the motorways in China anymore. That means the fleets need to buy new equipment if they would like to stay competitive. And so therefore there was a boom. We have seen a boom, really a sales explosion in the Chinese market, both on the truck and trailer side. Just to give you a number, there are numbers available somewhere in China. These are probably not official numbers, but we look to that. It might happen that in this year we will see on the truck side, heavy-duty trucks, it means above 14 tons, more than 800,000 units to be built, which will be an increase of 11%, coming from an already strong year last year. And on the trailer side, it's unbelievable. Last year, there are some numbers available talking about more than 600. I saw a number of 610,000 trailers, which is an increase of 216% compared with the year 2015, with less than 200,000 trailers. And then this year, in 2017, so more than 600,000 trailers was related to 2016. This year, we might see more than 650,000 trailers in China, which another plus 7%. So you can see there's really a sales explosion in the commercial, heavy-duty commercial vehicle market in China, and we benefited from that quite a lot. Also in the other markets in APEC, especially Australia, markets are improving now, and the demand is raising. Also the mining industry might come back now. That's what we see in some of the APEC markets, including Australia, which also will help the truck and trailer markets. Yeah, adjusted EBIT, there's a very nice success story here. You see our adjusted EBIT rose from zero last year in Q3 to 1.4 million, which stands for 6.1% adjusted EBIT. And this is really nice and mainly related to the trailer business, as I said. With Corpco, we are still not satisfied. I'm still not satisfied. We are right now in a restructuring of this production facility in the Inner Mongolia region, and this is running, and this is probably not the best example of our Chinese activities, but Corpco will be resolved next year. But this is a bus business. As you know, we do air suspension for buses with Corpco. The main driver for our success in China is the trailer business with our factory in Xiamen. Yeah, with this, I'm done with the market and with the main regions, and I would like to hand over to Matthias to talk a little bit more in detail about the financials.
Yes, thank you, Detlef. Good morning, everyone, and a warm welcome also from my side. Time for me now to put it all into a numbers context even further, and I'll try to do so beginning at the top of the P&L, and then slowly moving downwards towards the net profit line item, and then we spend a moment on the balance sheet and net working capital development. If we start on page 16 with the reconciliation of sales to gross profit for the third quarter, we see that the gross profit came in at 46.5 million, which is a gross margin of 16.8%, compared to a gross margin of 19.1% in the previous year. This is, of course, due to the disproportionate increase in cost of sales that Detlef already described, with a rise of 11.4% year over year, which clearly outpaced the sales growth of 8.3%. The impacts mainly come from the U.S. I list them here again in the gray box at the bottom of the slide: temporarily higher number of workforce, higher expedited freight cost, and this combined with a boost in demand coupled with the plant consolidation. To give you some more light on the 4 million additional operating costs, they split themselves roughly, just to give you some ballpark reference here, 45% into higher freight costs and 55% caused by the higher number of employees. Important to bear in mind with this picture is that these additional operating costs drop through all the way to the bottom line. We do not correct them in our adjusted EBIT figure. The restructuring of 4 million, that figure is shown separately here, that we do adjust for, but the rest falls through all the way to the bottom line. And as I move through the P&L, I will keep talking about this and describe the impact. Before I leave page 16, allow me to draw your attention to the right-hand side, where since Q1, we're doing this qualitative analysis for you to show you some of the mechanics and how they impact the P&L, which we believe is important. Workforce we talked about. Volume, of course, is positive on the one hand, On the other hand, we put a negative sign because it collided with the last moves of the plant consolidation and also came in with the unfavorable product mix. When we say product mix, it's important to bear in mind for the third quarter that this does not only refer to the distribution channel, i.e. OE versus aftermarket, as Detlef described, but also refers to the product mix itself, i.e. the character of the product sold. This is not unusual in a booming market like the U.S., where a lot of standard products with relatively lower margins are in demand, are being manufactured. The impact on the P&L, given our focus on serving the OE, as described by Detlef, then follows through all the way to the bottom line. Steel price, we talked about. FX rate also did not move in our favor this time, but those are just qualitative facts. If we turn to page 17 and the adjusted EBIT for the quarter, we talked about this. While the drop in the adjusted EBIT is not necessarily unusual in the third quarter in our business, of course, the significance of the drop, which then also has led us to the October 9 call where we adjusted our guidance, is of course more than we had expected ourselves. If you combine page 17 with page 16, I will leave it up to you to do the math. If we had not had the additional operating costs in the U.S. Where adjusted EBIT could have been. But the additional fact I would like to draw your attention to is the 9 months adjusted EBIT, which reached 8.4%. So we're still within the planned range of 8 to 9%. But given the updated guidance from October 9 that Detlef will come back to on his last slide, I believe, this is important to bear in mind as we look into the fourth quarter of the year. Looking at page 18, and I'm moving further into the profit and loss statement now, when we reconcile EBIT and adjusted EBIT, this is what you're used to, nothing unusual. We adjust the depreciation and amortization from the purchase price allocation with 1.3 million. Then in total, restructuring and transaction costs of 4 million, 3 million of which relate to the U.S. Detlef referred to China already on a previous slide, and the rest is coming from Brazil due to the closure of our plant and some other restructuring measures that we had to account for. The one thing that I would like to add here is that the absolute amount, because this slide talks about absolute amounts for the nine-month period, increased to 72.7 million compared to an amount of 70.6 million for the previous nine-month period in 2016. Moving on to page 19, from EBIT to net income, here is where I would like to spend a little bit more time because these details were not available in time for the October 9 call. That we did. So it is worth spending a moment on the finance result and on the income tax situation, because the finance result with negative 4.5 was 2 million lower than the minus 2.5 in 2016. There is two reasons that need to be borne in mind as we do the bridge. One is that the prior year number in Q3 2016 was impacted by a positive net effect of 1.5 million euro, which is the net of two impacts from the Haldex offer at the time. If you want the exact details, the 1.5 is the sum of a positive fair value measurement impact of 6.7 and the FX hedging expenses for the Swedish krona that the company did at the time. So 6.7 minus 5.2 give you the 1.5 positive net effect in 2016. If you add to that the higher net interest expenses that we had in the third quarter of 2017, given the additional promissory note loans, for example, that the company took out in 2016, then you arrive at the delta of 2 million between the third quarter 2016 and 2017. One aspect to be considered as well, we listed it here for your enhanced understanding, is the accounting for the KLL option to buy the additional stake for SAF Holland, which is a fair value measurement, which impacts the result by 0.3 million in the third quarter. The EBIT minus the finance result, of course, takes us to earnings before taxes, which I do not show on the slide, but I want to mention them nonetheless, which stood at 11 million compared to 13.8 million in 2016. The decline is caused by a decline, good wording there, by a decline in the operating result from 15.5, as shown on the left, from the 16.2 in the previous year, and discussed change in the finance result. Then adding the income tax or the tax result with a negative 3.5, here it is important to understand the change in the tax rate, which is now, if you don't mind me saying so, back to normal. The 32% as indicated at the bottom of the slide. Why back to normal? Because Q3 2016 showed an unusually low tax rate of 22.4%. This is also due to some of the impacts of the Haldex offer at the time. In this case, a one-off gain from a fair value valuation of the Haldex shares, which were subject to a much lower tax rate, which impacted the group tax rate going forward. And we stated this in previous conversations this year, you know, somewhere around the 32 is the more reasonable tax rate to calculate with. If we then look to the very right of the slide, the net income, which came in at 7.5 million, we see a very significant drop of the net income compared to the third quarter of 2016, where it stood at 10.7. But if we do the math as explained, then we arrive at the delta of 3.2. Just to summarize one more time, the 3.2 are the sum of the decline in EBIT of 0.7, the lower finance result of 2, and then the higher taxes of 0.4, which gives us exactly the 3.2 million delta on the net income. And those are the drop-through effects, of course, that I talked about earlier included. On page 20, we show the math for the EPS side of the house, basic earnings per share, versus adjusted basic earnings per share. Needless to say that given an unchanged number of shares as of September 30th, that the impacts are reflected here, which explains the lower numbers in Q3 2017. Moving slowly but surely more onto the balance sheet side of the financial statements is page 21, inventories and net working capital. Here, let me begin with the statement that despite the dynamic sales trend, inventories came in at 139.3, which you could call stable compared to the end of Q2, where we were just about the same number, a little bit lower. However, it is important to bear in mind as we move through the numbers that inventories increased slightly compared to the end of last year in the U.S., because we needed to step up inventory temporarily for the purpose of the plant consolidation. Net working capital stood at 142.7 in absolute terms and remained almost unchanged compared to the end of the second quarter. However, if you then do the math and divide the sales into this number, given that Q3 sales were lower than Q2, mathematically, you come to a higher net working capital ratio than at the end of Q2, where we stood at 11.9%. At the end of the third quarter, this number increased to 12.9%. However, given that we discussed this in previous calls this year, I would like to point out that trade receivable collection is very well on track. We were able to lower trade receivables by 12.1 million euro in Q3. If one talks about inventories and net working capital, it is only logical to continue with free cash flow. I will start with a broad statement before I take you into some details to explain some of the movements compared to Q3. Overall, we keep moving in the right direction with lower accounts receivable. We still have some way to go. We do, as indicated in the October 9 call, expect this number to come in below the 40 million euro number for the full year 2016. But if we look at some of those differences between the third quarter of 2017 and the third quarter of 2016, I believe the movements become more understandable. So allow me to spend a minute on this to explain this. Because what I just said around the inventory in the United States for the planned consolidation is reflected in the delta of the net proceeds from working capital changes, which only came in at 0.2 million in the third quarter of 2017, whereas this number stood at 4.6 million in the third quarter of 2016. If you then add the income tax difference and a higher income tax payment of 2 million in the Q3 2017 compared to 16, you come to a delta in net cash flow from operating activities of 6.4 million between the two periods, or in absolute terms, 18 million net cash flow from operating activities in 2017 versus the third quarter of 2016 of 24.2. Then we have an increased CapEx in the third quarter of 2017, 7.1 million versus 4.8. This adds a little bit more than 2 million to the 6.4 I just described. And in sum, that gives you exactly the delta of 8.5 between this year and last year, or in other words, between the 10.9 and the 19.4, the respective third quarter numbers for free cash flow. Page 23 then talks about net debt, certainly not to be forgotten. We reduced it based on positive free cash flow development from 135.4 at the end of the second quarter to 128.2 at the end of the third quarter. Of course, dividend payments and inventory requirements also played a role here. I don't want to go into too much detail other than saying that the additional planned reduction in working capital that we expect for the fourth quarter should also lead to a corresponding reduction in net debt as well. The equity ratio continues to stand at a solid 28.9%, slightly lower than at the end of 2016, mainly due to the dividend payment that we did. In this context, just be reminded that, of course, this number is highly influenced by the change in the balance sheet structure caused by taking on additional debt in the summer of 2016. And with that, I come to the end of what I had to say for the moment and pass it back to Detlef, who will round it up on markets and the company outlook.
Matthias, thanks a lot. Yeah, there are two more slides to go. Market forecast on page 25. I already talked about that pretty much in detail earlier in the presentation today. I will not go through all the numbers again. But as you can see,
North America really shifted massively into the good direction, to the positives, and also for the outlook for next year, for 2018. I would like to talk a little bit more in detail about this. On the trailer side, North America, which is the first line, you see ACT and FTR are not on the same page right now. That might change in the next couple of weeks and months if you go closer to 2018. But we believe it will be pretty much stable next year on a high level of 300,000 plus minus trailers, which will be a good number. And also we see that already in the discussions with customers in our order intake. So on the trailer side, everything in North America turns to be good. On the Western European and European side, you can see for next year a minus 5% predicted by company Clear. We are not so sure. I believe it will be better than minus 5, but that's a little bit too early. We will have our budget discussion next week with our teams here in all over the world, and then we will see what our people believe. Personally, the minus 5% are probably a little bit too negative. But anyhow, also this is on a high level. 300,000 trailer production in Europe is a good number, and as you can see, pretty much the same level than North America. On the truck side, for next year, you see a big deviation between ACT and FTR. FTR is talking about plus 21.7%, back to 300,000 units. ACT is also positive, talking about only plus 11. Anyhow, those are double-digit numbers and shows the North American industry, the commercial vehicle industry, is coming back very, very strongly. On the European side, truck market, plus 4.3%. Could be. Depends a little bit on Russia. As I said already, Russia is coming back as well. So we also see that quite positive. China, I talked about that already. One word to Brazil. I visited the Fenatran show 3 weeks ago in Sao Paulo, and it's the first time for years now, I would say 5-6 years, that I saw a lot of smiling faces. That means on the truck, trailer, and bus side, there are some signs, there's some hope of improvement. It will start with trucks, it's very clear. You also see that from the reports you get from the big truck OEMs. They all see a plus 10, maybe plus 15% increase in Brazil next year. On the trailer side, I'm not so sure yet. We will see. It's a little bit too early to predict this. But of course, if fleets invest, they first invest in trucks. That is very clear. That's always the same around the world. And then trailer will follow. And also on the bus side, we see already some improvement. So overall, Brazil is on a good way. But to remind you, coming from an extremely low level. Yeah, with this, I would like to come to the next last page, page 26, about our outlook. On sales and EBIT, there are two directions. On sales, we improved the outlook lately. We said earlier this year we will finish this year with roughly 1.09 million euros. We increased that to 1.125 to 1.135 million. And on the EBIT margin, we decreased our outlook. We said earlier this year we will end up at the mid-range between 8 and 9%, so you can expect 8.5. We reduced that now and say that it will be at the lower end of this range of 8 to 9%. Net working capital remains between 12 and 13% and CapEx somewhere around 30 million. And with today, I would like to confirm this outlook for the financial year 2017. Our long-term strategy 2020, the numbers are unchanged. We absolutely stick to that, and we are very confident to reach these numbers as well. Yeah, with this, I'm at the end of our today's presentation, and I would like to hand back to Stefan to summarize.
Yeah, the line is open now for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9* on your telephone keypad. In case you wish to cancel the question, press 9* again. So please press 9* now to pose a question. And the first question comes from Christian Ludwig from Bankhaus Lampe.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my questions. I'd like to start with the market forecast data you gave for 2018. Is it something that worries you that basically the areas where you are strong, the trailer business is expected to grow much, much lower than the truck business, so that your business mix will be less affected? Question number one.
No, that doesn't worry us at all, because that is something which isn't very normal. As you know, there is, of course, always truck and trailer markets are related to each other, but we always see different cycles. We never can predict that will fleets now buy trucks or will they buy trailers. I believe you need to see that on the long run. If there's one or two quarters or even one or two years where the fleets buy more trucks or trailers, basically we don't care. They will buy the other equipment anyhow. So I don't worry about that. And as I said, if fleets have money, if they need new equipment, they buy trucks first and then trailer follows. But basically, we don't care. For us, important is more closer to the product. What does fleet buy? That means if they buy, for example, on the trailer side in North America, for example, modern equipment, that means more air suspensions, more disc brakes, then this is absolutely in our favor. If they buy fifth wheels coming back to trucks, with some features and benefits which we offered, for example, our brand new E-Light system. This is then for us even more important if there are some numbers being a little bit lower or higher on truck and trailer in general. You need to look into the specific markets, specific vehicles. For example, the truck side, if we might see that next year, again, it's a little bit too early, but if the specialty trucks will come back, you know, trucks for dump trucks, for mining, etc., for oil fraction, etc., then we are in the play because they need special air suspension. That's what we do. That's where we are very strong with. So in general, the market is a market. And to answer your question, we are not worried about it. We need to look into the details, what our specific markets are doing.
Okay, next question I have is on China. You extract very nicely the boom we're currently seeing there. I'm not too familiar, to be honest, with the Chinese truck and trailer market, but is there a risk that this boom can turn into a bust very quickly when the initial demand is satisfied and then we're back to a basically normal level, which would be significantly lower than what we've seen today?
Yeah, of course, it can happen. Always there's a boom, there's a downturn. This is very normal. But there are two things. First of all, our market share in China, especially on trailer axle and suspension, is very low so far. The same is with other products like landing gears, fifth wheels, etc. That means even if the market is 100 or 200,000 units higher or lower, we gain market share and we gain volume. So we are coming as a follow-on from a very low level, and we will grow there regardless how the market will develop. That is one thing. Second thing is, and that is even more important, it comes back to the point I just mentioned about North America, it depends on what type of trailers and trucks the fleets are buying. And here is we see it as our big advantage. We see a very clear trend, finally in China, and we talked about it for 10 years now, we see finally the trend in China and in other emerging markets too, for trucks and trailers with modern equipment. That means they look for air suspension, disc brakes, they look for EBS, ABS, no, probably not EBS, but ABS. They look for automatic transmission, modern fifth wheels, etc., etc. So that means even if the market will probably in 3-4 years will go down, then the share of trucks and trailers with a Western style will still increase. So we are absolutely not worried about that. On top of that, and this is something very new, which we learned 2 weeks ago, to be very precise, we had some Chinese customers here in our factory, big customers in China, not big customers so far, not big customers, but big players in the Chinese market. They confirmed, and we checked that now, since 2 weeks now, it is published on the Chinese government website that there's another regulation will come, and this is now confirmed. This is the so-called GB7258. Okay, and I will repeat this now in the next couple of months, maybe 100,000 times. You will hear that now again and again. Why is that? Because in this new regulation, and this is to come 1st of January next year, and then there's a 6-month period for the trailer OEMs to change their production, to change their products, or let's say to adapt the trailers. And then from middle of next year, it's then in place. And that says that for all trucks and trailers which produce, transports dangerous goods or hazardous goods, there are two things mandatory. First is air suspension, and second is disc brake. As far I know, that's the only country in the world, okay, where this is mandatory. In other regions, for example, in Europe, this is a given thing. You know, for almost 10, 15 years, you see all trucks and trailers transporting these dangerous goods having air suspensions and disc brakes because of safety reasons. But now in China, it will be mandatory. And this is where we are good at globally. This is our number one field area where we are really good. We are the or one of the market leaders here, and most of our, or probably all of our Chinese competitors don't have this product, or let's say don't have this advantage for us as we have. So we prepare ourselves for that. We believe roughly 10%, probably 15% of the Chinese market are this trucks and trailers, and this will change the picture in China for sure. It was a long answer. That was a long answer to a short question. Sorry for that.
Yeah, but okay, very interesting. And maybe one final follow-up on China. It was my understanding that so far, at least, your business China was 90-95% OE business and almost no aftermarket business.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. And that will not change the next 2 or 3 years because you need to have population, which we don't have, which will change now. And as you know, in all the other markets, it takes 2 to 3 years before the aftermarket will kick in. But also have in mind, please, in China, the aftermarket is extremely competitive. There are so many copycats, and it will take a while before the aftermarket with original spare parts will come in. But we also work on that. We increase the number of service stations, spare part dealers, etc. To develop a good service network is essential. We do that, but again, the next 2 or 3 years, there will be not a big swing to, let's say, 20 or 25% aftermarket share. But it will come.
Okay, well, that means basically your margin will be capped in Asia-Pacific for the time being at maybe 5, 6%. There's not much more to...
Yeah, let's see. You know, don't underestimate the products we are going to sell now in China with air suspension, with disc brakes, are a little bit different than to the normal 13-ton bread-and-butter axle, which they do for 100,000 in the Chinese market. We are not in this market, okay? This is a new, these are different, much different products with probably a little bit different margins.
Okay. And then a quick final question. Update on the military business in the U.S. Is there anything in the pipeline for next year, or
nope.
Nothing to expect?
Nothing to expect. It might come, okay. We are prepared, but we see nothing significant so far.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Ludwig, for your questions.
Next question comes from Frederick Bitter from Exane BNP Paribas.
Yeah, morning. Thank you very much. I have three questions. If you could do them one by one, they're fairly short, I would say, anyway. On APEC China, post the strong growth we're going to see in 2017 after the new overweight regulations being implemented, how do you see generally the trailer market in production volumes in the next few years developing, and also perhaps more importantly, the addressable market segment for you?
Yeah, the overall numbers, yeah, I have a chart in front of me, okay, which we're not going to share with you, but because these are internal numbers. But this chart is talking about roughly 500,000 trailers until the next couple of years. So an extremely high level. If this really comes true, I don't know, but that is how some people in China see that. The addressable market, as I said, could be 10-15% for this new regulation to come, the GB 7258. It's not the volume market, it's a niche market. It's for tankers and silos. It's the same all over the world, but a very interesting niche. Does it answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Thank you. So basically, I mean, you're implying that market volume, production volumes on the trailer side will be at least sort of at least stable, if not growing from this current level.
That's what we hear. But yeah. There's one but, and I need to add this. This is absolutely unpredictable. Okay, I visited China 3 weeks ago, and I said, okay, we had also some Chinese customers here. And we ask these questions frequently. Nobody can really predict this. These are just some internal, let's say, best guess, okay, because we look to the population in China, how big are the fleets, the fleet park, and then there are some estimations when to exchange, what to exchange, etc. So it increased heavily, as I said, from 2015 to 16, with almost no pre-warning, and it could go down as well as fast. We plan from year to year. Long-term planning is difficult, but to be on a very positive side here, it looks promising.
Okay, thank you. And then on the US, particularly the aftermarket business, would you expect any negative short-term midterm effects from what is phrased in the report as contract overhangs? So basically, you not being able to deliver spare parts to your customers, given your focus on the OE business and also the capacity restraints you had there.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Bitter. Maybe I can take this one. No, we don't expect any negative impacts at this point. There is two major reasons for this. One is internal, one is more with an industry focus. From an internal perspective, there is a clear plan in place that we reviewed as late as yesterday one more time. To get rid, for lack of a better expression, of the so-called aftermarket backlog in the U.S. towards the end of the year. That is very well on track. That's the internal reason. More from an industry perspective, let's not forget that this is an SAF Holland challenge only, because that would not be true. It's an entire industry that is faced with the uptick in the market. So this goes for all of the supply chain as well as the receiving customers. The industry in North America got used to this a little bit, and there is a certain element of understanding, if you allow me to use those words, for the situation. It is very important, though, that you communicate on where you stand with your customers, on when you can deliver, and then this works out in the aftermarket business. That's our current impression.
Oh, okay, thanks, Dr. Hayden. And then while I have you speaking already, the last question would also be to you. On free cash flow for this year, I mean, your guidance is it should be below the level of 2016, which is around 68 million or so, if, on top of my head. So at 9 months, 17, you had 3 million. What would you expect in terms of free cash flow in Q4?
And I knew this question would come, Mr. Bitter, one way or another. I appreciate the question because, of course, when I presented the slide, this was the logical next question. And it is somewhat difficult to guide you to an exact number, apart from the fact that we don't include this as a guided number. But I said that what we said earlier this year, where we said a number around 40, this is no longer our assumption given the development up until now, where we would rather see us coming in somewhere between 35 and 40. Allow me to leave you with that range. And the reason for that I will give to you, as you rightfully said, you know, we currently stand at 3 million positive after 9 months. If you were to do a very simple calculation by adding the Q4 cash flow from last year, you come into this territory, and that is why I used the words we are moving in the right direction and still have some way to go. This is a focus topic for the organization between now and December 31. But let's not become too critical at this point, because this is something that clearly moves, and history shows this in Q4 for various reasons of own and customer as well as supplier behavior. So I'm confident that we will end up somewhere in the range that I just quoted.
Okay, thank you very much. That's great. Thank you.
And next question comes from Sven Erik Szymanski from MainFirst. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, thank you. I have actually two questions which are related to one another, and that is regarding your strategy 2020. So the first one is, how are we supposed to interpret the adjusted EBIT margin guidance of greater or equal to 8%? Is that through the cycle, or is it basically what you expect with a sales volume of 1.5 billion? And the second question related to that is, if it's not through the cycle, but it is actually what you expect with 1.5 billion, what is your underlying gross margin assumption? Because we have seen pressure on the gross margin recently, and if it is an 8% EBIT margin, guidance was 1.5 billion, we either have to assume that there's no operating leverage, or that you face continuous pressure on the gross margin that you factored into this guidance. If you could elaborate on that, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Szymanski, I try to answer this question. Strategy 2020, we said 1.5 billion, that is a target, and we would have at least 8% adjusted EBIT margin. That's the number we are going for end of 2020. Everything in between, that means in 2015, okay, we published this strategy. At that time, we have been at 8.9%, if I'm correct. And we said, yeah, it might happen that our profitability will, in margin, okay, will go down to the 8% for a couple of reasons. Okay, one of the reasons is, that the other element of our strategy 2020, that we are going to shift our sales from today's core markets, North America and Europe, more to the BRIC or next 11 countries. And this sales, that should be one third of our sales until end of 2020, out of the 1.5 billion, should be then in the BRIC countries. The issue is, if you would like to call an issue, that these additional sales in the new regions will be OE-related sales. That means almost no aftermarket, as we already discussed earlier in this call here. Aftermarket will kick in later. In the first couple of years, we need to develop population, and then we will harvest the aftermarket. So that means there is one burden, if you would like to say so, that these additional sales will not come in with the today's profit as a mixture of OE and aftermarket. Second one is we need to invest. That means we need to hire additional people on the engineering side, sales side, IT people, etc., to develop these countries, and that costs money. In 2015, we talked about 135 people and roughly 35 million euros in capex on top of the normal range from 2015 to end of 2020. So all this, again, it costs money. The mix will not be, let's say, in our favor as today. It is to come. It's investment in the future. But the 1.5 billion and 250 million should be organic growth. The other 250 million with merger and acquisition activities, and this should be at least with 8%. So this is the long-term view how we develop the strategy 2020. And as I said already before, we are on track on this.
Okay, that's understood. Product mix, so that's obviously a good explanation. Just getting back at your answer to question on China, is that part of your organic growth scenario, or is it coming through joint ventures and is part of that growth that you have in for your 2020 guidance?
Yeah, so far it's organic. Okay, we did our last acquisition last year in September in Brazil. In 2014, end of 2014, we did another acquisition. It was a company, Copco, which is part of our strategy to grow our market share in and sales in the air suspensions for buses, but later on also for trucks, because Copco is also quite good placed for the coming air suspension for trucks, which is not the case so far in China. Acquisitions in China might happen, okay. It's too early to talk about this, but so far our growth is based on organic growth. What we might do next year is to invest in a greenfield operation in China. It means to build a factory. That's not decided yet. But if the market will develop in the direction, as I said a little bit earlier, plus the new product like air suspension disc brakes will come in, as I said, then we need additional capacity, and then we might need another operation. And Xiamen is probably not big enough. But again, this is to come. But so far, to answer your question in one sentence, this is so far organic.
Okay, so we put this into organic. That's good. Actually, a follow-up on the greenfield. Can you give a rough estimate, if you were to do so, what that is, how much that is?
You know, I give you an example. We built a new factory in March this year, as I said, in Turkey. Okay, we opened it. If we do that, and you know, we are not on regarding CapEx. Okay, we are talking about 2-2.5% normally a year. The new factory in Turkey cost us in the first step 3.5-4 million euros. Okay, we don't. That means we go into a rented building. Adjust the building to our needs, then we bring in equipment like welding lines, assembling lines, painting equipment, etc. So with 5 million, let's say plus or minus, we can do a lot. If we need to invest more in China, maybe, but not something, all, I don't know, 15, 20 or 25 million. With 5 million, we can do a lot. So that might give
you an idea
of what we are talking about.
Okay, super. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
Currently, there are no further questions, so I would like to repeat, if you want to pose a question, please press 9-star. Another question from Julien Bateau from Pascal Advisors.
Yeah, hello. Hello, gentlemen. Just a quick one on gross margin. If I exclude all the one-offs, and you are actually up in Q3, despite all those negative items we've seen, i.e. the steel price and the mix and everything. So does it mean that it's basically the base is there now, and that you should grow based on this? And this we come back to the discussion you had with the former analyst about the 8% margin. I mean, I hardly reconcile this, because if the normal gross margin today is at this level with the very bad mix and a lot of headwinds, then I might assume that the gross margin might expand from there. And the second question is very simple. It's the convertible is coming to maturity in April. So your balance sheet will look very different in 6 months' time. So maybe can I have a comment on it?
Sure. I'll start with the second question. I'll also take the first. But on the second question, allow me one correction. It's not the convertible that is up for maturity. It's the corporate bond.
Sorry.
Yeah. Which is an important difference, because the corporate bond comes with a coupon, not only in terms of the instrument, but the corporate bond comes with a coupon of 7%.
Exactly.
So, I'll stand by what I said previously. in as much as the company will definitely get rid of the coupon one way or another. How do we do that? We either repay at maturity or we refinance. I am not trying to avoid the answer, but there could be scenarios where it would make sense to go back into the capital markets to refinance such a bond should the need arise, for example, in an M&A scenario. It's way too early to comment on that, but it's those two general options. But the clear message is that we will definitely get rid of that coupon, which certainly impacts the finance result today and then in a more positive way going forward. As for gross profit and you know the numbers that you just did, allow me to start with one comment. It's not my job to always go back and adjust and show the world should it have been different and should we not have incurred. We show a lot of alternative profit measures already. I only pointed you in this direction when I commented on the EBIT, when I said I'll leave the numbers up to you. But you, of course, now started at the top of the P&L with gross profit and did exactly that. You reversed the temporary impact back into the number and come to a level that one might look at as quite satisfactory, even a little bit higher than the 19.1 in the previous year. We believe that the math, of course, that you did, which is simple, is correct. But we also believe that a sustainable basis is in place for the company. And that is why Detlef and I keep emphasizing that we stand by the business case in terms of the cost relief for the plant consolidation in the U.S., because otherwise we wouldn't have done it in the first place. But we also believe that we are continuously improving in terms of our company-wide efficiencies, both in terms of production but also in terms of the G&A ratio. There is something to what you just did. We will just need to show you and deliver on it in the future.
Okay. Just an extra comment on the refinancing. What kind of coupon would you foresee if you were going to the capital market today? Would that be 3-4% rather than 7%?
Well, of course, that would depend on the maturity. You know, I will share this much with you that I don't have the latest quotes in front of me. And those banks on the call that now feel compelled to present them, I do have them, because we follow, of course, the debt markets on a continuous basis. You know, I think it would not be prudent to now comment on the size of the coupon. You know, I think you can do the math yourself for a company with our risk profile, what it would be roughly with different tenors, and then you get there, or you eliminate it altogether should we repay. I hope that is fair.
Yeah. And do you have any possibility to buy back the convertible bonds earlier?
There is a structural, for lack of a better expression, a possibility in the T's and C's of the convertible bond. This is true for both sides, also for investors. We are following this closely, but at this point in time, and this will become public or is already public in part, some of the convertible bond investors are looking at conversions. Have started to convert. We're following this closely, but of course, each side has a contract with each other, and we will look at the T's and C's closely. It is not something that you should be expecting in the short term for us to action on.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
There are no further questions.
So this concludes today's conference call. Thank you a lot for attending. As always, if you have any follow-up questions, please give us a call. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Thank you. Bye-bye.